Let me switch to my headphones.
Alrighty. I'm eating some carrots, so I should probably stop munching.
Yeah, I don't know if I can edit that shit out.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, it's Wednesday morning, and you are listening to session number 11 of the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast. The topic of today's show is e-commerce. More specifically, what you should do if your store started losing traffic and how to differentiate your site from others selling similar products. Brendan Tolley is here, so let's get started. Can you give a brief intro to your experience, what you do?
Okay, so my expertise is probably split into three. So one would be IT and general technology, probably business, and then sales and online marketing. So my primary business right now is the search engine shop. It's a web consultancy, and we do online marketing stuff for three main groups of clients: e-commerce, like small local businesses, and then corporate clients. I've been running that since about 2008. Now, before that, I had an IT company for around 8 years. So my background is actually in IT, and while we were running the IT company, me and my partner managed to acquire an online store for free. It was doing about 100K a year of revenue at the time, and the guy wanted to get a job because 100 grand revenue isn't very much profit. You know, he's making 10 or 20 grand profit at the time, so it's a full-time job and he isn't really making any money. So we said, you come for work for us, and he was going to close the store down. So we said, well, we'll take it off your hands if you want, and he effectively gave it to us. So within the first year, we took that from 100K revenue to doing $1 million revenue. And then in the second year, took it from $1 million to 6.5. So that's kind of, it's a much longer story, but at the time I was 24, 25, and I had no idea how to manage that much cash flow. And it just turned out to be a disaster. At the end of the day, we ran out of cash and it killed both businesses, the IT company and the online store. And the irony is that the online store grew really quickly and was very successful. And towards the end, before we ran out of cash, the IT company was actually really successful and was on track to do $2 million in services revenue. So the whole thing was a bad corporate structure. This was like at 24, 25, you have no idea how to manage that sort of money coming in and out every day. So ultimately the whole thing fell over. But at the end of that, I had to get an IT job because the business went bust, but I started getting calls from a lot of friends who had like web design companies asking about online marketing, because when we took over the store, I had no idea what SEO was. And through the process of like changing things on the web page, we'd suddenly rank higher on Google. And then, you know, I got deeper and deeper into this online marketing stuff for the e-commerce store. So that's how my current consultancy was built. So in 2008, I started it. And then late in 2009, we won a government contract together with six other companies. They're all like complementary. We're not all web agencies, but we won this government contract in Australia to do workshops and training for small businesses. So over the last 5 years, the government has effectively paid for us to stand in front of small business owners and talk about web stuff and talk shop, basically. So that's how I built the business. So yeah, I guess that's the short version.
That is pretty short. I'll probably cut that down a little bit. The first thing that I can think of is when you mentioned you got this online store for free and you built it up from 100,000 to 1 million. Well, who taught you? How did you know how to build it up that much?
It was a lot of luck. It was selling enthusiast and performance computer parts. So at the time, there were a handful of players in the market. Nobody was innovating. Everybody was on like a really old, crappy CMS or e-commerce platform. And we hired a full-time developer. In the end, we had nearly two full-time developers on it to build out the feature set in the store. So we were more agile and just more aggressive. And I guess we were kind of young and stupid as well. So it was, I guess, part dumb luck and part just being aggressive and, you know, seeing things, testing things that worked. We did a lot of forum marketing. So this was before Facebook, as well as doing SEO stuff. We did a lot of forum marketing and kind of cheeky stunts like in that market. So in that market, there's a lot of products are very exciting. And when they come out, there's only a handful of these performance products. So we actually created products out of nowhere, did fake mockups and things like that. And that got us a lot of press. And we got a lot of backlinks from like Anantech and Tom's Hardware at the time. So that helped our SEO. And then we were very active in forums and kind of leverage the social media of the day. So that's SEO and I guess social media with it, the word of mouth online were really the two reasons why I built so quickly. And also the product selection at the time, this was the early 2000s in Australia, people were afraid to buy from overseas. Like today, no one cares. People buy from Amazon all the time or eBay or whatever. People have no problems plugging credit cards into computers. But back in the day, people had a real fear of buying stuff online and credit card fraud and the details are going to be stolen. So we kind of capitalized on that and brought a lot of product in from overseas and sold it locally in a market that, you know, where the customers were afraid to buy it from overseas, that they had no other options. So, you know, we had the product, so it sold.
So it seems like you learn by doing most of the time, right?
Yeah, that's kind of my style. So I'm definitely a kinesthetic learner. So absolutely learn by doing.
A lot of people say you need a coach to really make it to go to the next level. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it. So at the end, when we realized the business had outgrown us and our skills, we actually hired a business consultant. I don't really like the word coach so much. But I guess there's always a point. So in business, one of the things that she actually taught me was that you outgrow everything in business. You know, the business might outgrow you or you outgrow certain things, but at some point you are going to need external help and a sounding board. So I think everybody needs a coach or a mentor at some stage, and they might not need it all the time. There's various stages the business goes through where you're going to need help or it outgrows your skills and you're going to need that expertise. So I think that if you're stuck and you're struggling and you're stuck at a certain point and you need to move to the next level, I think a coach can definitely be a good way to get there. And there's a lot of things you get from a coach. You get expertise, you get a sounding board, you get kind of that forced accountability as well. So different business coaches or whatever will give you different things. It might not necessarily be knowledge that you need. It might be that accountability or that push that you need to get to the next level.
You did mention government contracts. You won one of those. How does one win a government contract? It just sounds so like out there.
Yeah, it was put up. I think there was, because in Australia, we have something called the National Broadband Network, which is a federal government project worth tens of billions of dollars to roll out optic fiber all across Australia. So part of that, there is some funding set aside to assist small business owners to get online. So I think there was initially $16 million in the first year up for grabs. And there was a tender process. So you had to apply and respond to a tender. And I think 47 different entities got a slice of the funding. We ended up partnering with, so like I said, six other companies. And it was, so one of the other companies did all the work to get the tender and it was pulling in a lot of favors. And in the end, I think a professional tender response company wrote the final reply or the application or whatever you want to call it. It was a big, long, drawn out process. And it was actually very unique that such six companies or seven companies together got it. And we're all quite small. We're all like five person agencies or businesses as well. So it was a process and a half, put it that way.
I can imagine it's a process, but then I'm also visualizing the actual outcome and it's you talking to like three people that have no clue about what online business is and still getting paid for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's been challenging in that government's government and they don't really care. All they care about is numbers on the page. So there's a lot of reporting and auditing and a whole bunch of stuff that was rolled into it as well that unfortunately I didn't have anything to do with. One of our partners took care of it, one of the companies in the group. So we've won the contract's been rolled over for a number of years now. So it's taken a variety of forms. So it's always a struggle when it comes to renewal time. If there's a government change, if there's an election and the government changes, that also impacts it. And there's 50 different things that can go wrong. And you know, all it takes is for someone not to like something and the project gets shelved. So yeah, it's definitely not the easy road, put it that way.
Let's get into e-commerce a bit, because I know that's where I know your expertise lies. And the most common thing that I get hit with, the question I get hit with, is a guy comes up to me and says, I have an e-commerce store. It's been doing great for the last 5 years. And then last year, something happened. All my rankings went down. The traffic is not anywhere where it's supposed to be. Obviously, I should have called you a year ago, but I'm calling you now. What do I do? So how do you handle that?
Yeah, that's a tough one because for a long time you could have an online store and you could just let it sit there. There was probably a period up until 2009 or 2010 that you could just whack up a store and so long as you got traffic, it kind of worked. Now, Google has been, in the last couple of years, you've probably seen this too, that Google has been so aggressive with updates and changes to the search results and SEO and even AdWords. Like every week I log into AdWords and there's new features and buttons and they move things around. So I guess as a starting point, every single e-commerce business should be running Google product listing ads. It's probably the cheapest and highest qualified source of traffic that any e-commerce business could get. So that would be my number one recommendation. And the number two is that it takes work. Like if you have an online store, you need to be working on that thing every single day. So you're probably aware we have a new, I'm splitting out my e-commerce side of the search engine shop into a new business called Pareto E-commerce.
Right.
It's effectively a DIY version of the monthly one-on-one consulting I do with clients. And there is probably 160 action items in the Pareto, well, it's called the Pareto E-commerce Blueprint, but some of those are, you know, month-long projects. So that kind of gives you an idea of the scale of the number of improvements you can make to a store or the things you're going to be paying attention to actually have a fully successful online store. So it's definitely not set and forget anymore, that's for sure.
When you say work at daily, can you at least mention maybe one or two things that someone should be doing daily with the e-commerce store?
So one thing I'm big on is getting, so you can look at data, you can look at Google Analytics all day long, right? And you can look at the data and get insights from it. One thing I'm huge on is getting insights directly from customers. So so when we take on a new e-commerce client, one of the first couple of things we do is, number one, is set up abandoned cart emails. And in general, fix all the emails that are going out from the online store to humanize them and to encourage and kind of invite a response from the customer. So the abandoned cart emails is key because you get a lot of replies to that. You ask them why they didn't check out, you know, why they left the cart halfway through. And if you're paying attention to that, and if you're doing customer service well, at least a few days of the week, there'll be little tweaks you can make to the website. For example, if you're getting the same customer service question all the time about shipping, like what's the shipping cost, what courier do you use, how long does it take to get here, then, you know, that content should be on the website. So, I mean, one thing that you should be doing all the time is upgrading the content and tweaking and improving the content based on what's happening with the customers and the customer service stuff. So that would be, you know, a lot of people talk about conversion optimization and changing the colors of buttons and all that sort of stuff. That's bullshit. You know, that's like optimizations on top of optimizations. You know, go for the easy stuff first. Answer those customer questions online through the website. The other thing I'd probably say that takes a lot of work and attention and resources is video. Really, in today's world, you know, there's so much competition in e-commerce land that if you're not doing video, you're really missing out on a huge opportunity. And that's a big deal. Like, doing video is a lot of work and a lot of time and resources. So that would be the other thing that probably needs weekly attention, maybe. Depends on how many, you know, new products you have going online and what sort of store you are and what type of inventory you have as well. But those are my two things, probably content, customer service, and video stuff.
A lot of the sites I see coming into my agency is that what they do is they'll take, let's say, 3,000 products on their site, and they straight up copy all the manufacturer's descriptions. It's really thin content, and it's all copied content, and they don't understand why it's not ranking. How would you address something like that? Would you go through each page and actually reword it? How would you work with something like that?
Every product page really needs to be its own standalone sales letter. So it's a very common problem to have a lot of products and the description is one line long or one paragraph long or whatever in it. You know, you trigger these thin content penalties with Google, or the pages simply don't rank. So one really easy way to work around that and kind of add some uniqueness to the content, and that will help your conversion as well, is to add shipping information and payment information, you know, a couple of paragraphs about each to every single product description. So that will fatten out the product pages to a degree. You know, you might take it from 50 or 100 words to 300 plus words. So often that can be enough to get the pages ranking or to pull the site out of any thin content penalty. So that would be the first one. And then look at basic on-page optimization stuff. So two key things. So looking at the title tags. So simply by adding two words to the title tags, you can get significantly more traffic and better qualified traffic. So the two words are buy and online, because when someone's at the end of their buying process or ready to buy, you know, they've finished their product research and they're ready to buy something, they will type into Google buy whatever the product is online. So, you know, buy PlayStation 4 online, for example. So simply by having those two words in the title tags, you can easily get a, you know, 20, 40, 50% increase in organic traffic. The other thing in the SEO space, and you've probably seen it, everyone talks about backlinks. It's all about getting more backlinks, ranking higher, Google penalties, all that sort of rubbish. There is very few conversations going on online about click-through rate. So another easy way to get more traffic is to write better meta descriptions. So it's not really going to help you rank any higher, but it will help you get more clicks when you do actually appear in the search results. So just writing a more catchy meta description, actually having the meta description set for product pages and making sure it isn't a mile long or just, you know, often it's just a copy and paste from the product description itself. So just by giving it a bit of attention, it's another easy way to get a traffic win. And you don't even need, you don't need more backlinks. You don't need to rank higher. It's using the existing ranking. So I don't know how much AdWords experience you have, but it, you know, in AdWords, if you change the top and bottom lines around, just swap them around in the AdWords ad, often you can get 100% increase in click-through rate. So, you know, the same thing applies to organic search. You do a little bit of work on your meta descriptions, handcraft them a little bit. Now, if you have 3,000 products on your website, it's going to be a little bit hard to handcraft them. So I would say, you know, give the top 20 or 50 some personal attention. And then most e-commerce CMSs, you can roll out a template that will work for most products. You can include the product name in there and the product title and just roll out a template. So,
what do you think someone should do to differentiate their store from someone else? Because a lot of the time you'll see that, you know, 10 stores in the top 10 other than Amazon look the same.
I'm big on photography. Really good commercial grade photography is key. A lot of people have shitty photography or stock photography, which is terrible. I hate stock photography. So having really good photography of your products and also people. A lot of sites I see, they have great product shots, but there's no people in there. I see this all the time. Like you see a classic example, like a hotel or restaurant websites where they have great shots of the venue, but there's actually no people in there. So having really good photos that don't look overly polished or fake to the degree that stock photography does, and actually having people like smiley, happy, attractive people in the photos that they just look and feel genuine. It's a really easy way to set yourself apart. Like there's a lot of talk about video online, which is fantastic, but photography is a lot easier than video, and you can use photography again and again. That doesn't, like, video gets old after a while. You know, if you shoot something on an iPhone 1, you know, it's not going to work in today's world. But photos, so long as they're high enough quality, you can use them for years and years. So that would be, you know, an easy way to set yourself apart.
If you're starting an e-commerce site right now and you already know how hard SEO is these days and how long it takes, where would you go for traffic?
eBay, I guess. It depends on what the product is, whether it's a commodity product or a specialty product. I mean, specialty products are always going to have an inbuilt USP to a degree, particularly if they're your own products that you've developed. But definitely would look at eBay and Amazon. Before even going after the site, I'd road test the products there as kind of a proof of concept to make sure there's demand and make sure they sell before investing a whole bunch of time in a website.
You know, we had a conversation the other day about success, and you said something that kind of made me laugh, and that's success is boring. Can you kind of explain it a little bit to the audience?
Yeah, for sure. Like there's, particularly in online marketing, there's so many flashy new toys. And it's like a classic example, like if we go back to when we started doing workshops in 2010, it was kind of the era where there was social media consultant. There still are today, but it was really bad then, where everybody was suddenly a social media consultant and social media was the thing to go for. And it was like the question we're always asked in the workshops was, do I need a Facebook page? My web designer said, I have to have a Facebook page. It's like the fundamentals don't change. That's the thing. And they're not exciting or glitzy or glamorous, but they work. So success isn't about finding the latest and greatest toys. Sure, there's an advantage to sitting on the cutting edge, but unless you're doing the fundamentals that work, that are, it's boring to send an email newsletter every month, but it works. You know, we have e-commerce clients who do email newsletters, and there's one in particular that always struggles to get the newsletter done, but it's worth about $5,000-$6,000 in sales every time they do it. And that's not exciting, and it's boring work. You know, to sit down and write a newsletter might take 2 or 3 hours, but it works, you know. And that's success, you know. So I guess when I said that, I meant that when things are working and things are successful, you're really focusing on the fundamentals. And once processes are set up and running, there's not much excitement to getting up and writing a newsletter once a month kind of thing. You know, that's not really an exciting job, but that's what it takes to make the business successful.
Yeah, what I find too is that success has a lot to do with routine and consistency. And those two can get pretty boring after a while.
Yeah, exactly. People kind of crave something new as well, and it just, new is great, but what works is the stuff that always works. You know, for example, email marketing, like that's not exciting or sexy, but it's kind of a bit boring, but it absolutely works.
Well, everyone's kind of trying to sell flashy stuff online, almost everyone, right? So where does one go to learn the fundamentals?
Ooh, that's hard, man. I think in the online marketing space, you really need to have business chops before you kind of start looking at, I guess marketing is built on top of business. So it would be better to go after the business skills as opposed to chasing the marketing stuff. I don't know, man, like there's probably 5 or 10 business books that cover core fundamentals of business. Things like maybe Work the System and the E-Myth, those sort of books. That's a tough question.
Go ahead. What else you got?
What else have I got? Man, you put me on the spot. I don't know, man. The 4-Hour Work Week was a good book in some ways. You know, it sold a lot of people the dream, but there was a lot of good core business sense in there as well.
I don't know. I have a buddy of mine that read the 4-Hour Work Week, got really hyped up about it. He had a year and a half on unemployment. He thought he was going to be able to build a business doing the 4-Hour Work Week, and now he's back to working at Staples.
Yeah. I guess you got to like to take Tim Ferriss's advice with a grain of salt. But I think Work the System is a great kind of business story. You know, that's kind of the classic story of, and I see that with the people who come to our workshops. Everyone has a great idea for a business. They build a business and they kind of build themselves into it. So that's a great book, not just about the processes and systemization, but kind of the understanding the guy's journey as well, how he was at the failing point and how he managed to turn around was, again, not doing anything exciting or sexy, but it was working on those kind of key fundamentals.
You always recommend that financial book. What was that one?
I think it's called Financial Intelligence for Entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Yeah, I remember you mentioned it. I got it, and it's brilliant.
The numbers are key. Like every business runs on money. So if you don't understand money and how money and cash flows inside a business, then, I mean, that was our problem when we had the e-commerce store. We had no idea how money worked past a certain point. And we got to the stage where we would spend all the money in the bank account on stock, and there'd be $100, $120,000 in the bank account the next day. But we didn't understand anything around cash flow or how that the money actually works. So that, I guess, understanding the numbers is also key, particularly if, you know, when you're starting out small, that's fine. But once you start dealing with decent sums of money, that sort of stuff is really important as well.
Okay, it's been great. Tell everyone where they can find you.
Probably at my main website, thesearchengineshop.com, or on Twitter, Tullibo, T-U-L-L-I-B-O.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review in iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.